And now, this is WBAI New York at 9 p.m. One message, and then we get to Emmanuel.
It's brunch time again. On Sunday, June 7th, WBAI producers, members, and friends will gather at Bernard's French Cuisine on the Lower East Side for brunch to benefit WBAI. Meet Delphine Blue, Anthony Sloan, Lauren Comito, Andrew Phillips, R. Paul Martin, Evelyn Tully Costa, and many others, plus enjoy fine French cuisine. And it's only $10, so call 212-279-0707 to make reservations. See you at Bernard's.
And it's a little bit after 9 o'clock, and that means it's time for technological revelations and other things on Off the Hook. Good evening to one and all. This is Emmanuel Goldstein. The program is Off the Hook, where we talk about technology and its many uses, abuses, and just those things you haven't thought of, and also those things that people do not wish you to think of or know about. That's what we're here for the purpose of education and revelation. It's been an interesting last couple of weeks. First of all, I want to thank everybody that called in during Marathon and help make Off the Hook a successful program in that particular light. And I do hope that everybody that called in fulfills their pledges. That certainly adds to the joy of getting a pledge is when the pledges are actually fulfilled. So I'm sure that won't be any real problem here. There's been all kinds of hacker developments. We've got the new issue of the Hacker Quarterly out, 2600 Magazine. And that's, as usual, causing quite a stir in various enforcement circles, but that's pretty much what we're here for, as this program is as well. We're going to be taking quite a bit of phone calls tonight. This is one of those catch-up programs we weren't on last week, and as traditional, when we're preempted, we like to hear from listeners. So the number is 212-279-3400. We'll be taking as many phone calls as we can possibly fit in the next hour. Now, there have been all kinds of hacker raids, people hiding out and remaining silent, and all kinds of ominous, foreboding signs against those people that try to bring information to us, information regarding what kind of operating systems there are, how they work, what kind of bugs there are, how easy it is to gain access to particular systems. And it's, as usual, a frightening thing when you see such ominous, foreboding signs going on. But it's something that we have to face, something that we have to get over, and something that I'm sure we'll be seeing again in future years, months, what have you. So we'll be continuing to bring you the latest as far as those kind of things go. All kinds of technological developments, too. We just discovered something, actually. There were a number of rumors going around. We've announced it here on this program a couple of times concerning AT&T calling card shortcuts. And I believe now we have finally figured out just what those shortcuts are. Now, here's how it would work. You would dial 0 plus your long-distance phone number, and rather than have to enter that bothersome 14-digit code, it seemed that a simple 5-digit code would work. That's right, a 5-digit code. I believe it started with either 13 or 15. I can't recall at the top of my head. But 1315, and any 3 digits after that would connect you to the number that you had just tried to call using O+. Now, it doesn't take much to realize that that's not a very safe way to make a free phone call if that's in fact what you're trying to do. However, we tried it over at the 2600 office to see what would happen when we tried making a phone call that way. And what we got back was something rather interesting. We knew that the number that we were calling from would be recorded, as is the case with any AT&T or New York Telephone or New Jersey Bell, what have you, calling card call. Your number that you're calling from is always recorded and will be referenced at some point. You can count on that. This particular feature, this five-digit calling card, did not work from payphone, so we knew that whatever it was, it was something that would eventually bill back to the number that it was calling from. What we have found out is that this is part of a service AT&T offers that they haven't really told anybody about, called AT&T Call Manager. And the way our phone bill came back, I believe what we attempted, depending on whether the code was 15 or 13, we entered three twos after those first two digits. So it was either 13222 or 15222 as the calling card number that was requested after the zero plus. And what we got back was simply an indication on the phone bill saying, call accounting code 222. So basically what AT&T has is a service that allows you to break down your calls. Of course, you have to tell people to dial the call 0 plus and to dial five more digits after that. That would tell you what your particular access authorization code is. So let's say you have five people that share a phone. Well, you tell one of those people, every call you make, you dial 0, area code, number, and then enter these five digits as your calling card, and it will show up separately on the same phone bill. Now, I wasn't able to determine whether or not there's an extra charge for this. We're looking into it. AT&T, really, they don't advertise these features all that much. I don't understand why. It's awfully confusing to consumers. But those of you that thought that might be a free way to make phone calls, well, I think we told you from the beginning that it wasn't. But now you'll find that the calls you were making thinking they were free will simply be a little better itemized. And that's really about all that they will be. Now, other things happening, this is on a personal note, after many, many years, a lifetime really, of being on a crossbar switch, the phone exchange that currently serves me is going to be cutting over at the end of this month to a number 5 ESS. What does that mean? That means that finally I'll be entering the 80s, and we'll have such services available as call waiting, call forwarding, and things like that. It means the end of harsh-sounding busy signal, mechanical-sounding rings, and the end of a way of life that we've all grown accustomed to. And, of course, nobody is aware of this. People go around with their daily lives not aware that at the end of the month, things are going to change in a rather subtle way, but they're going to change enough so that, well, you'll notice it. You may not notice why you're noticing it, but you will notice it. For one thing, touch tones may no longer work in areas that are cut over because the computers can be programmed to ignore touch tones, which, again, we feel is an extremely unfair thing for the phone company to do. There is no special service offered by touch tone service. Touch tone is the default. It's the equivalent of charging a fee for every different number that you use. If you use the number 2, you have to pay more than if you use the number 5 on your touchtone phone. They can do that. They can tell you what you can and cannot use, what you must pay for and what you can't pay for. But forcing people to pay for touchtones is horribly unfair, as we've said for years. And the fact that an old mechanical system is unable to differentiate who pays and who does not pay and so gives everybody free service is proof enough that there is no special service being offered here. The only difference is that an electronic switch can have the sophistication to isolate those people that have not paid the fee. Now, I have heard reports, I've yet not been able to verify them, but encouraging reports that the Public Service Commission will allow this fee to go away in the next couple of years. This is in New York State. I know this has already happened in California, Washington, and various other places around the country, Wisconsin too, I believe. So the battle is being won slowly but surely. It's just going to be very frustrating, though, at the end of the month when no touch tone phones work anymore, unless you pay the extortion fee. Okay, other things going on. Here's something affecting you people over in New Jersey. New Jersey Bell officials said as of May 22nd, thousands of New Jersey Bell customers were dialing long-distance calls between February 17th and the 27th of April, and they weren't being billed for any of the calls. That's right. The situation involving about 2 million calls was blamed by New Jersey Bell on an internal programming error. The error affected 15 exchanges in the state and blanketed all direct dial calls made through AT&T. AT&T is rather upset at this, too. New Jersey Bell said that the calls were registered and customers will eventually be back billed, which could result in some large telephone bills. And they're extremely nice, though. They're arranging a flexible billing arrangement, so there's no financial hardship. Okay, something else rather amusing. This came over the Risks Digest, which is an electronic Usenet newsletter that I encourage everybody to get involved with. And check it out through the internet or whatever network connections you have. Comp.risks is the full name of the newsletter. This comes from Randy Lindsay. He says, it's not uncommon in large companies to require an annual payout in which each employee picks up their paycheck in person and displays ID. This is apparently to guard against payroll padding. At the facility where I'm doing a project, all 1,500 employees received a memo ordering them to report to the cafeteria for their annual peyote. Now, peyote appeared several times in the memo and even in the title line. Eventually, one of my colleagues ran payout through the spelling checker, and sure enough, it suggested peyote as the alternative. For those that don't know, peyote is a drug related to mescaline. They theorize here that perhaps the spelling checker writers are junior staff with closer ties to their college countercultural days than to corporate terminology. But another example of infiltrating the system with whatever you care to infiltrate it with. Folks in Maryland using food stamps had a bit of a problem. This according to the Washington Post of May 13th. Maryland food stamp clients used a new electronic benefit system, and they were unable to buy groceries after the state-of-the-art computer system failed, causing long lines at hundreds of stores in the state. The system, which the U.S. Department of Agriculture has said it plans to use as a model for the rest of the country, became overloaded for the second time in a month and shut down for about 2 hours as hundreds, possibly thousands of recipients tried to use their plastic benefit cards to make purchases. Typically, the first few days of the month are heavy shopping days because that is when clients receive benefits. The system reached a point where it clogged. This according to Helen Zabdala, spokeswoman for the Maryland Department of Human Resources. She said that she did not know if other benefits that are encoded on the plastic cards, such as welfare payments and child support, were affected. About 31,000 Maryland residents in Montgomery, Prince George, and Cecil counties and Baltimore now have the cards. Clients in Baltimore, Howard, and Arundel counties are to get the cards by midsummer. Eventually, 200,000 recipients will use them. Zavia said the electronic benefit transfer system is better than the old method of issuing coupons to clients, and she said that problems are going to happen because it is the first of its kind in the country. The system last stopped working April 11th for about 2 hours. She says it's going to have blips. We are happy with the fact that we haven't had more. So a wonderful way to look at things. Shoppers and grocery store officials complained of long lines and carts loaded with groceries abandoned at checkout stations. Food stamp clients were given $50 vouchers to make purchases, but cashiers had to call a toll-free number to verify each transaction. We just think it's unfortunate that this happens and it inconveniences our customers, says Mitchell Herman, Senior Vice President, Shoppers Food Warehouse. Okay, here's something taken from a Dutch newspaper concerning the emergence of Big Brother. Departments of Justice and Traffic over there are studying the possibility to introduce smart cards to detect, among other things, violations of the traffic laws such as speeding, which is quite common on the Dutch highways, crossing red lights, frauds with number plates, all kinds of things like that. The other things that could be controlled is whether or not the car owner has paid his insurance fee, road tax, whether the car has had its yearly technical check. The system under study consists of a smart card to be attached to the car. Detectors in or near the roads, and a central computer system. The article says, a major drawback is the possible feeling that Big Brother is watching you. By installing a privacy code on this particular card, data on law violations will only be transferred to the relevant organization. So you can all relax, because it's going to be secure, or so they say. Another problem is the value of information obtained by electronic means and stored in magnetic form in court. Currently, it's up to the judges to value the information provided by computer systems. The article ends with, the organizational consequences, however, are still completely unclear. Of course, attention should be paid to the protection of the system against tampering. And another indication of Big Brother also came to us from the Risks Digest. This is called, the risk of serving lunch to the First Lady. Yes, that's right, according to Timothy Petlock. Serving lunch to Barbara Bush can cause all sorts of problems from the past to be dug up. My roommate and I found out firsthand on Saturday afternoon. He called me 20 minutes after I dropped him off at work, saying, it seems I'm in jail. Could you come downtown and bail me out to bring $220? Because, well, it seems they did a background check on all the hotel employees that would be involved in the function that day. He had bounced one too many checks at a grocery store in the northern Wisconsin town where he lived a year and a half ago. The checks were all paid before he moved down here, and he had no idea that any charges had been filed. So if you think there's any possibility that you've ever done anything wrong, don't do anything involving presidential politics. Now, there's been some talk recently, and we've talked about it here on this program, about TRW's offer of giving a free credit report to everybody who asks for one. However, there's been some talk about what they give out and what it is that they get from you in return. And some people seem to feel that they're not giving out a full credit report, they're giving out sketchy information, but at the same time getting more information from you when you ask for your particular credit report. Now, this was reported also in the Risks Digest. Mary Conan reported the lengthy list of items that TRW asks for in order to receive the free credit report. Peter Loshin reported that he found his credit report satisfyingly sparse. TRW is reported to be in the information sales business, which would imply large and quite complete records. How does one reconcile all of that? Well, the Fair Credit Reporting Act requires that a copy of the credit report be given to anyone upon request or for a fee, or upon denial of credit for no fee. At the time the FCRA was passed, which was 1970, things were simple in the credit reporting and information business, and of course, they're not simple today. One must wonder what the definition of credit report would be in today's world. The TRWs of the world would argue that it would be just that part of a data subject's record that is pertinent to a credit decision. It's unlikely that any data subject gets the full content of the record by requesting a credit report, although it is tempting to believe the contrary. That comes from Willis Ware, also on the Internet Risks Digest, and it's rather troubling to think that when you ask for your files and you get your files, you're not really getting the whole picture. And the only people that are getting the whole picture are the ones that run the computer systems. And again, I have to ask the proverbial question, where is the threat? Is the threat from the hackers that will get in and figure it all out, or is the threat from people that feel the need to keep all this information on everybody without telling them what it is? And finally, a story from the Los Angeles Times, May 20th. We've also discussed this in the past, but it bears repeating. 2 days before President Bush took office, a researcher discovered that the new administration planned to erase computer backup tapes containing thousands of messages sent by electronic mail throughout the White House with departing President Ronald Reagan under his administration. The report alarmed groups representing historians and reporters who for decades have been able to go to the National Archives and plow through the records of past administrations. They're able to gain valuable insight into how policies are formed and carried out. The groups knew that some email tapes already had been shown to carry incriminating messages between John Poindexter and Oliver North in the Iran-Contra scandal, to name but one. Fearing that much more treasure was about to vanish in this new electronic age, one group immediately filed suit and won a temporary order preserving many tapes. That ignited a far-reaching clash between researchers and the Bush administration that is finally coming to a head in federal court. At stake is not only past tapes but present ones, which are being regularly erased before unknown numbers of messages can be printed out and saved for the National Archives. Now, it's interesting because ordinarily, of course, you would say that your electronic mail is private and you should be able to do with it what you wish. However, in government issues, when you're discussing policy and things that will affect the lives of millions, billions of people, erasing these bits of history is a very dangerous thing, and it makes it very easy to rewrite history. Imagine if those incriminating messages were never uncovered involving Oliver North and Poindexter. Things could be very different indeed. It's important when we're dealing with issues of government to have all these little facts, not just the finished product of how it all turns out in the end, the textbook version of history, but those little bits of information that show you how history is being built, how it's being made and developed. You know, that's the not-so-pretty sites. We need to see that as well. And that's why it's important to keep on top of this story as well as all the other things that are happening. I urge people to constantly read their newspapers and uncover those stories that have to do with privacy invasions, with new technology that can be used in good ways and can also be used in bad ways. And think about all of it. Don't be intimidated by people that say, you cannot think about this, you cannot explore this, you cannot try entering these commands on this computer system or this voicemail system. The only way to learn is by doing, and I hope there's a lot of doing out there. Speaking of doing, one more thing before we get to the phone calls, and again, that phone number is 212-279-3400. And that announcement that we want to make is that there will be hacker meetings this Friday, and I have to go into the magic paper bag here to actually list off the amount of them, because there is an incredible amount. Now, while a lot of people will claim proudly that the hacker world is dying and that the hackers are being killed off one by one and locked away in prisons and intimidated into not asking questions and moving away to foreign countries and things like that, No, it's not happening. It's not quite happening like that, because if it were happening like that, we would not be having meetings all around the country this Friday. Hackers in New York, Washington, D.C., San Francisco, and Los Angeles, as well as potential meetings in places like Chicago and St. Louis, are starting up as well. I'll tell you what we know so far. Of course, the usual 2600 meeting will be taking place at the CityCorps Center. That's this Friday from 5 to 8 p.m., and that's right smack in the middle of CityCorps in the lobby area by the payphone, where we all gather, trade information, meet people, things like that. And we'll have all kinds of interesting tidbits, as we usually do. In Washington, D.C., there are now meetings at the same time, first Friday of the month from 5 to 8 p.m., and these meetings are taking place at the, get this, Pentagon City Mall. That's right. We're going straight to the heart of the matter. Pentagon City Mall, 5 to 8 p.m. on the first Friday of the month. Now, of course, a mall is a rather large place. it's going to be kind of difficult to find people there, so if you're looking for... it shouldn't be that hard to find computer hackers. Look for people with hacker T-shirts and perhaps buttons and magazines and things like that. People look kind of mischievous. Yeah, a mischievous glint in the eyes, and there you go. San Francisco, the usual meetings take place at 4 Embarcadero Plaza on the inside part, right by the Mrs. Fields, and that's from 5 to 8 p.m. local time, first Friday of the month there. And there is a Los Angeles trial meeting this Friday, and by trial meeting, well, we'll see how it goes, and if more than one person shows up, maybe there'll be another one. A Los Angeles meeting will be taking place at the Union Station, corner of Macy Street and Alameda, and it'll be held inside the main entrance by, where else, the Bank of Payphones. And if you want a full list of all the payphone numbers, they're all printed in this current issue of 2600. That meeting again taking place this Friday, all meetings Friday from 5 to 8 p.m. And what we hope to achieve by this is just to get people to talk to each other. There's nothing worse than everybody retreating into their own little shells, not sharing information, and not really advancing and learning things. A lot of interesting bits of material have come out of these meetings. Of course, yes, those of you that are concerned about such things, there is surveillance at these meetings. We are watched many times. Many times we're able to find the people that are watching us. And for some reason, they're never happy to find that we know that who they are, even though they know who we are and we don't care. So it tells you something about various attitudes there. But it's a fun time for everybody, as the world of computer hacking tends to be. All right, 212-279-3400. That's our telephone number. And we might as well start taking some phone calls if you have any particular questions on technology or experiences to relate, things like that. We'll be happy to hear from you. Let's see who's out there. Good evening.
Hi, good evening. I've been doing some experimenting with the Star 6-9 and Star 5-7 you talked about a few weeks ago.
Yeah, in fact, let me refresh the memory of people. I'm glad you brought that up. Star 6-9 is a feature that, since we mentioned that a couple of weeks ago, we've been doing some research into that. It works in many parts of Long Island especially, and it seems to work outside of local areas. In other words, if somebody from, say, Montauk were to call you in Nassau County, and you didn't pick up the phone in time, or even if you did pick up the phone in time, you could dial star 69 and it will call back the last person that called you. And this is especially troubling because it's a form of caller ID that is kind of being snuck upon us that we don't know about. Our number is being transmitted in a form, and we don't have a way of preventing that. Now, what point did you wish to make?
Well, the interesting thing is, well, I live in Westchester County, and I dialed star 69. There was nothing great about that. There was just a tone said your call cannot be completed as dialed. Then I did star 57, okay? Now, I have two phones in my house. One is an AT&T, and one is one that I purchased. It's sort of a combination phone and a clock. Now, whenever somebody hangs up the AT&T phone in my home, I hear like a little peep on my, you know, the phone that I purchased.
Right, a little chirp. That means the voltage of the line has either dropped or gone up.
Right. Now, when I dialed star 57, you know, I also got the, you know, the tone that said your call cannot be completed as dialed. Now, when both phones were hung up, about 2 minutes later, I heard that chirp on the phone that I purchased. Now, when I picked it up, the phone was entirely dead for about 10 seconds, and then I got the dial tone again. So I found that kind of strange. I don't know why I did that.
That's very interesting. You know, you should try the exact same thing again and see if it happens again.
Okay, I will when I hang up.
Yeah, now, the other code you were dialing was Star 5-7, right?
Well, Star 5-7 was what did that.
Right. Star 5-7 is called Trace. Now, that's what you're supposed to hit if somebody calls you and you wish to notify the authorities that you just received a harassing call. However, since this service has not been announced, I imagine you can experiment with it to your heart's content, and if it's your phone calling your other phone, I don't really think you'll be able to report yourself. Play around with it, see what happens.
Yeah, the interesting thing, I wondered why they would be saying that, you know, the call cannot be completed as a dial. Obviously, something is happening there that my phone is chirping after I do that.
Mm-hmm. It's very disturbing, though, that this information is being sent out without our knowledge and without any way to prevent it from happening.
Mm-hmm.
Because technically, the way the system works, you call somebody and they can call you back, whether or not you you realize that your number was being transmitted. It's you know, it's one of those things where education pays off, and unfortunately there's not enough of that right now.
That's true. Well, just thought you'd like to know about that.
Okay, well, keep experimenting.
Okay, take care.
And hopefully everybody out there will play around and see what they can find out on their telephones, because telephones are rapidly changing. Before you know it, the way that we dial will be completely alien today. Good evening.
Alien today.
Go ahead. Turn your radio down, please.
Hi, you had spoken 2 weeks ago about something called DSO, and you had given a four-digit number. What is exactly this DSO?
Okay, DSO is a digital switching office, and basically a digital switching office can be, in this area, one of two type of animals. One is DMS 100 made by Northern Telecom. The other is a number 5 ESS, which is probably the better of the two. They're basically electronic digital switching systems as opposed to mechanical switching systems.
Have you heard of something called Kenmore DSO?
Kenmore, that's part of Brooklyn, right?
Yeah, I'm in Brooklyn, and
right.
I dial the number, and I get a recording that says this is Kenmore DSO serving several exchanges.
Right, that means that that's, you reach the Kenmore central office, and it's listing the exchanges that are local to your central office that are served by that digital switching machine. Usually when they say DSO, they mean a Northern Telecom DMS 100, because number 5 ESSs, they're usually proud to say 5 ESS.
Is there anything that can be done with it?
Well, it's good to know what your local exchanges are. It's good to know what kind of machine is serving you. Northern Telecom DMS-100s have a notoriety for all kinds of crosstalk.
That's what I heard.
Yeah, if you play around with that, if you dial certain numbers in certain sequences, you can get patched into all kinds of conversations. Again, I'd like people to experiment with that and see what they can find out and send the results in. Because
I had tried a couple of different things and it just goes dead, but I'll fiddle around. Any idea of how many combinations? A two-digit, three-digit, four-digit, any idea to start with?
Unfortunately, I haven't been in an area that allows me to experiment. Otherwise, I certainly would have an answer. But I do know that if you play around with stars and pound signs and things like that, you'll get all kinds of strange results.
I'll try it and let you know what happens.
Okay.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Anybody else that has a DMS-100 serving them, that would certainly be helpful. I'll demonstrate, if I can, the difference between a 5ESS and a digital switching system. This is going to involve a little bit of setup here, but I'm sure we can manage that. Okay, we have to get that particular line open, and we have it open. Now we're going to get our friend the dial tone. All right. Now we're going to dial a number that does not exist. And that number does not exist in... Let's see, this number does not exist in a 5ESS or a DMS-100. Good question. I believe this is a DMS-100. And let's see what happens when we connect to that. Actually, nothing seems to be happening. Okay, we got a special little tone there, apparently. I accidentally called a test number. How do you like that? All right, let's call a number that does not exist in a DMS. I think this will probably be the easiest way to demonstrate this. And if you can translate those numbers, then you'll have a number to a DMS.
The number you have reached.
Okay. What that is, that was an intercept recording. Actually, you know what they've done? They've gone and changed it, so it doesn't always work, unfortunately. And that's the nature of these things. You have to stay on top of them. A DMS-100 will do it one of two ways. They will either play you those three tones on the error message, or they'll play them preceded by a ring. That's right, you'll get a ring, and then you'll get the error message. That never happens on a 5ESS. Never happens. You always get, you get what we heard just now, except that wasn't a 5ESS, that was a DMS-100. There are other more subtle differences. DMS-100s tend to be a little bit quieter, I find. Some people will debate me on that. There are differences that you just have to play around with. But once you find them, and you can find them by calling in New York, in exchange followed by 9901, and most numbers will work. Most numbers will tell you what kind of machine it is that's serving the area. And then you can play around with rings, busy signals. Busy signals can be found at the 9970 extension, and rings can be found just about anywhere. So let us know what you find out about that. Our number is 212-279-3400. The program is Off the Hook. This is Emmanuel Goldstein with you until 10 o'clock. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yes. There's something that's very interesting about the frequency that WBAI is located on, 99.5.
Uh-huh.
When I listen to it, I can usually hear some very weak interfering station in the background, and I've often wondered about that because I thought, well, you know, there couldn't be any other commercial FM station or within maybe 200 or 300 miles around.
Well, actually, where are you located? What area?
On Long Island.
How far out?
Around Hempstead.
And do you get this mostly when you're driving around?
No. This is. I'm in my apartment.
Uh-huh. I know there is a commercial station at 99.5 in Delaware, and I don't know, they must be 10 million watts or something, because they do interfere with us on Long Island a lot. I'm not quite sure why that is. Our engineers are working on figuring that out.
Yeah, but there's another possible explanation to that I thought of the other day, and if you take 99.5 and divide it by 2,
uh-huh,
you'll get 49.75.
And what's on that frequency?
Now, 49.75 is a band where there are a lot of different things, like remote control devices and these wireless handheld telephones.
So you think it might be a harmonic of some sort?
Oh, it sounds to me as though it could very well be the second harmonic from... I would suspect the wireless telephones, because there are a lot of people in this building that have them.
So in addition to what we reveal on this program, people can actually hear wireless phone conversations on BAI.
But you can't make out the conversation because it's the nature of FM modulation.
Mm-hmm.
A WBAI is always much stronger.
Mm-hmm.
And those things, I think, are AM, and it's going to be very difficult to pick it up. But it's an interesting thought, and if anybody had a radio receiver, well, not a communications receiver, but some type of receiver that can tune through that band, it'll be nice to listen and see if they get the same problem, and then they can switch over to the receiver tuned to 49 megahertz and see if there's a strong signal coming in there at the same time.
Uh-huh. Do you listen to a lot of radio in New York?
A lot of radio?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Have you caught any interesting pirate radio stations? Because I was looking around for some of those the other day.
Okay. When you say listen to radio, I listen to a few stations.
Uh-huh.
I'm not a ham or anything like that.
Right. But if you explore the FM dial a little bit, you will find some pirates, especially towards the lower end, and some of them are quite interesting.
Oh, okay. I might try that. Around here, there are a lot of educational stations. For example, Hofstra University has one down
right
at the end of the...
They're not pirates.
There are a couple of others.
Right.
I picked up a couple of stations from some of the schools in Manhattan.
Uh-huh. Yeah, there are lots of non-commercial stations, but there are also some non-licensed stations. And, of course, while that is technically breaking the law, sometimes you do get the most interesting programs through that. And it's also... interesting to see people doing it their way, you know, having a radio station that runs off of a Walkman and is just playing whatever it is they want to play. As long as it doesn't interfere with other radio stations, one has to debate whether or not there really is any harm in this. But I would like to know more about it, see if possibly we can get some pirate people to call us.
Yeah.
and tell us what it's like to broadcast over the airwaves. Because there's a whole world of activity out there that a lot of us aren't aware of.
I wouldn't encourage anybody to do that because when I was living on the West Coast, I remember the FCC really threw the book at somebody that had a pirate station that was operated not too far from LAX,
uh-huh,
the airport there, and they tracked them down and they gave them a pretty stiff fine.
Yeah, they will do that, and that's something that is important to tell people, that the FCC does not take these things lightly. But as a social kind of a thing, it's interesting to study to see what kind of people are out there, what kind of programming they put on, and why they feel the need to do this in the first place. Is FM radio or AM radio not serving their needs? You know, what is it? Is it all a big ego trip, or is there something that they're actually doing differently? So that's something we're going to be exploring here.
Actually, one more thing on that 49 megahertz band. If you keep your power down below a tenth of a watt, you don't need a license to operate in that band.
That's correct.
And they used to have that in the citizens band. Of course, the citizens band is a complete mess now. But,
right, anarchy.
But in the 49 megahertz band, it'd be very interesting, you know, to get a good antenna and a sensitive receiver there and see what you can hear.
Uh huh.
And with a low power transmitter, you'd be surprised how far you can communicate with people.
That is true. That is true. Many miles sometimes under good conditions.
Okay, I just thought I'd pass that on.
Okay, thanks for calling.
Right, bye.
And some people actually have been sending us tapes of cellular phone calls. Yes, that's true. They are out there. It's illegal to listen. Of course, it's illegal to tape. But some people have been sending us tapes anyway. And we're studying these as kind of a profile of American life to see what kind of people are on cellular phones. It's extremely simple to do, and you can make as many laws as you want saying that it's illegal to listen, but come on, let's face it, until there is some encryption put into the actual frequencies, into the radios that are transmitting these conversations, there is not going to be any protection. We might as well just show everybody how easy it is. So again, the address here is WBAI 505 8th Avenue, New York, New York, 10018. And we believe in educating people and not abusing technology in a way that hurts people. And unfortunately, not everybody feels that way, especially a lot of people that are in power. But enough of that. 279-3400, area code 212. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hi. Here's a computer problem. Is it possible to confirm presidential election results? There is every possibility that rigged election polls are being used to back rigged election results.
Well, I don't know what that has to do really with computers.
Well, Allah, remember, Perot is the inside Republican government hacker.
Uh-huh.
You know, and the way they're using the polls right now, it seems to indicate that Perot is taking all of the votes away from the Democratic candidate instead of logically taking it away from the Republican candidate because he's a Republican.
Well, it's interesting. I've heard it from both sides. I've heard people say that it's going to take votes away from Republicans, it's going to take votes away from Democrats. I think what you're asking is there a way to prevent any kind of fraud using computerized elections? Is that what you're asking?
We're now in the high-tech age, and George Bush and the CIA have been holding on to the national security state's computer system.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And all of the stuff that's going on is really strange, you know, with only 1% of the nation holding on to all the power structure, while all around us, everywhere, nationwide, we're seeing the results of this, and yet, interestingly enough, none of the election polls seem to make sense, period.
Well, there's nothing new there. The only difference being that computers are being used more and more to perpetrate this. As far as how to tell when it's happening, you know, it's, your guess is as good as mine right now until we start figuring out how the systems work.
Yeah, right.
And that's something that you best leave to people that can infiltrate these systems and learn what they're actually doing.
I don't know if you have to. You see, that's the problem. If they are rigging them, they're breaking the laws, right?
Of course.
And there should be some way to have some sort of, you know, the whole idea that we have is Big Brother's always watching us, but we watch Big Brother.
Exactly.
Right? And so that part of the process doesn't seem, is still in its infancy.
Well, again, that comes with lack of understanding of it. If we knew exactly what was being done and how it was working, what computers were being used and where they're located and whether or not they can be inspected and how they can be inspected, we'd have a much better sense of whether or not there was any fraud. But right now, we haven't a clue.
Well, we've got a couple of months.
We do.
All right, man.
Okay, thanks for calling.
Thank you.
And that's a very important thing to think of for the future, because the day will come when you vote from your house on your personal computer or on your touch-tone phone, and it's important to know that your vote actually does count and that your vote is not being counted against you in any way, and that it's remaining anonymous. Eventually, the day will come when people will say, why should it remain anonymous? What have you got to hide? That seems to be the saying of the latter part of the 20th century. What have you got to hide? If you're not hiding anything, you've got nothing to be afraid of. Well, we've got to show people that that's not necessarily true, that people are entitled to their privacy, and that we can hide whatever we damn well feel like hiding. Okay, it's 16 minutes to 10 o'clock. The program is off the hook. We've got a ton of phone calls here. 212-279-3400 is our phone number. Good evening. You're on.
I enjoy your program very much, and you've mentioned the magazine 2600. I'd like to get a copy of the magazine or be a subscriber. How is it possible for me to do so?
I'll give you the phone number and I'll give you the address. The phone number is area code 516-751-2600, and the address is 2600 P.O. Box 752.
2600-752.
P.O. Box 752, Middle Island, New York, 11953. And you know, it's interesting. Now I give the mailing address out, and I'd like to know if any other people know something about this. We've been getting some really weird pieces of mail because a couple of issues ago we ran an article on postal hacking, as figuring out the barcodes on your envelopes and playing around with stamps and things like that. Nothing to cheat the post office, just to understand what they're doing. Since then, we've gotten a few letters from different people with 2-cent stamps on them saying, it's possible to mail letters for 2 cents. And one person has offered to sell us this knowledge, but I'd like to know if there's people out there that are willing to share this knowledge as to how this is possible, if this is possible, or if it's just another scam. Literally, these letters come to us with just a 2-cent stamp on them and nothing else. And inside, the person says, I mailed you a letter with just a 2-cent stamp on it, see? And they seem to know that it's going to go through.
Is it upside down, the stamp? Or?
No, it's not upside down. It's a regular 2-cent stamp.
Oh, by the way, what is the zip code? Middle Island?
11953.
11953. Okay, thank you, Emmanuel.
Okay, thanks for calling.
Bye.
There's all kinds of things in the post office that people should know about. postal mail is going to turn into electronic mail. It is conceivable. It's getting closer every day. A piece of mail going through postal machinery can be categorized and sorted in various ways and treated just like a piece of computerized mail. And the technology will exist, if it does not exist already, for authorities to look at your address and say, where did this person get mail from? Because it all goes through machines. So it's important that we know what it is they're doing and we know what freedoms we wish to preserve and that we fight to preserve them. Ooh, that's a horrible line. Who's there?
Good evening. Hi, this is James.
Hi, James. You're going to have to make it quick because you got a terrible line, unfortunately.
Sorry. Yeah, listen, something weird happened to me, and it's with a... Right?
Uh-huh.
Because I was doing too much BBS calling. All of a sudden, after 4 months of non-service, my phone rings.
Okay.
Now, they've been doing some renovation in these buildings on my block here, and I'm getting outgoing service, and I haven't had a phone service for 4 months. You ever hear of anything?
Well, okay, let me ask you a question. First of all, you say your phone was turned off because excessive BBS. You mean you didn't pay your bill, basically?
Exactly. I was foolish, and I got caught up in the wonder of it, you know.
Okay. What state are you in?
New York State.
Okay. What you want to do, first of all, is dial 958, see if that is your phone number. And if it's not your phone number, then what's probably happened is somebody in a neighboring building or apartment has gotten a phone, and somehow the cable pair has come into your apartment as well. I've seen that happen 100 times.
Really?
Yeah, it does happen. And occasionally, you know, if you ring that number, was the call for you, or was it a wrong number?
No, it was for somebody who, I guess, the actual phone number is set up for.
Uh-huh.
Like a business here. But, yeah. I mean... Now I'm back on BBS and I'm doing local calls, but so you've heard of this before, huh?
It can happen, but you should check it out and see if it really is your phone line or if somebody else's phone line has come into your house. It's debatable. You know, if a phone line comes into your house, do you have the right to use it or don't you? I don't know. I'm not going to give you an answer on that.
I know. Oh, and let me add one quick thing about postal hacking.
Yeah.
I set myself up with this is silly, but like a pseudo business. You know, in other words, I put my name and a business. You should see all the... I get invitations to seminars. I get free software.
Uh-huh.
So you're right. There is a lot of cool stuff to be done. You
know? When you get your name on a mailing list, forget it. You can't stop it. I get
bundles of mail every day.
You get free Visa card offers and all kinds of things. We have all kinds of misspellings of names that we see come into the office where it says, well, because you're such a valued person and such a high-ranking part of your community, this is a person that doesn't technically exist because the name is completely spelled wrong. So
it's fascinating. I mean, I got free invitations to PC Expo and everything.
Well, it goes to show you how much value those things really contain if they invite people that don't exist and businesses that don't exist to take part in.
You're right. One last thing. Who sings that song you have in the beginning? I love that.
Oh, that's sung by a guy named Don Letts, who used to be part of a group called Big Audio Dynamite. He's now part of a group called Screaming Target. In fact, anybody out there part of record company, he's really getting messed around by particular record companies, and he's looking to release a very good record in this country. And if anybody has a means of getting a listen to a real record company to listen to his particular music, please write me here at the radio station.
Well,
that's great.
Listen, keep up the good work, Emmanuel.
Okay, thanks for calling.
I love it.
All right. And our address here at WBAI is 505 8th Avenue, New York, New York, 10018. And, boy, we've got a ton of calls, so let's see how many more we can get in. Good evening, you're on. Oh, that's me, but I want to hear you. Good evening. Anybody there? Okay, well, we can't have that. Good evening.
Hey, how you doing, Emmanuel?
Okay, how are you?
I got a question. You brought up some things about electronic postal mail.
Uh-huh.
I had just read an interesting article on ISDN. Hayes has just come out with a product, ISDN product for the next computer that you can hook right up to the DSP board, digital signal, DSP as in digital signal processing board. And I'm just trying to generate some conversation on ISDN. And could you tell the listeners a little bit more about ISDN?
Well, ISDN is really in its infancy, but basically it's a tying together of all kinds of technology, your phone, your computer, anything you can possibly imagine. This is ultimately what it will evolve in. Now, as with anything, there are advantages to it, but there are also incredible potential privacy risks.
Okay.
You know, where your every movement is known, your every button that you push on a particular machine is known.
They say this ISDN is pretty fast too, and
sure, it's the equivalent of having. Let's say you work in an institution, okay? You work in a university or a business of some sort, and all the phones are tied together. Imagine every phone in the country tied together like that, where you could instantly recall somebody. You dial a number and it rings immediately.
Okay.
You know, that kind of thing. Where
one other thing,
you call somebody who's busy and you get a locally generated busy signal instead of one from far away and the trunk is not used up. That kind of thing.
Okay, they have the ISDN, but I don't want to leave out this important fact because they also have the internet protocol. Running over the ISDN, which I thought was pretty interesting, too. Okay, Emmanuel.
Okay, thanks for calling.
Bye.
All right, let's see who else is here. Good evening.
Hi, good evening, Emmanuel. Just a few things in regards to some of the stuff you mentioned. You talked about milk. You talked about return addresses on envelopes. And a very disturbing point, which has gone through the courts, is that the law enforcement agencies do not need a warrant to get the return addresses off your envelopes. To open the mail, they do, but not for the return addresses.
Yeah, the logic behind that is that it's you know, a piece of paper that's being passed through the mail, and anybody can see it anyway, including your postman, any postal clerk, you know, that kind of thing. Now, how about this? Does it extend to a postcard and the contents written on a postcard?
I don't know, but it's certainly something worth finding out. The other thing is you mentioned people are sending you 2-cent stamp letters. Now, bear in mind, by definition, they may have sent 100 letters, that you're only going to see 2 of them.
That's correct, and I thought of that.
That didn't make it.
I thought of that for the person that was offering to sell the information. I said that was probably what this person did. But what about the people that aren't offering to sell that information? They're just sending letters with a 2-cent stamp on it, and it is getting through. I don't think they sent 100 copies of that.
Well, it's worth trying and checking out. Anyway, just finally, the person who was talking about the interference he was getting on WBAI 99.5, it's very doubtful he's getting a cordless phone harmonic there because cordless phones are narrow FM, which is 10 kilohertz wide. WBAI, of course, is wide FM of, I don't know, 200 kilohertz or so, something like that.
Something like that.
But there are a lot of other 99.5 FM stations in the area.
A lot of others?
Well, but by definition, there's one up in Albany, and Poughkeepsie is kind of the mid-range point there. And that's where you start hearing them. It's a pretty good station. Not as good as BAI. It's an oldies radio station.
Uh-huh.
If you're ever up there, you might want to tune it in.
Okay, I'll keep it in mind. But I know there's one in Delaware that does step on us quite a bit.
Yeah, but under the FCC regs, you're only clear channel for something like 40 or so miles outside your primary zone.
And if we could be clear for those 40 miles, I think we'd be happy. But we do get a lot of interference there as well.
Very well. Yeah. All right, take care.
All right, thanks for calling. And there is, of course, a project underway at the Empire State Building to raise the transmitter that many... New York City FM stations share, and hopefully within our lifetime that will actually come to fruition, so we'll keep people posted on that. All right, let's scramble and get some more calls. Good evening. Yes, that's what it is. Good evening.
Hi.
How you doing?
Okay, let's see. I have 3 quick little things and then 1 thing that I think is very important. The first thing is you said a long time ago that you have a really cheap calling card.
A really cheap calling card.
Well, it's either cheap or they don't charge you that 75 cents a call.
Right. There's actually 2 companies that offer a service like that. One only locally, and that's cable and wireless, and the other is a company called Metromedia, formerly known as ITT, that offers a nationwide calling card with no surcharge.
Okay. Now, how do I contact them?
I would call 800 information and ask for the number for either cable and wireless or Metromedia long distance.
Okay.
Now, of course, it's absurd, and I don't understand why this is, that all the major companies, AT&T, Sprint, MCI, they offer you a calling card, and then every time you use the calling card, you have to pay a surcharge. Now, a surcharge is the equivalent of a penalty. Why do you have to pay a penalty for using the card for the only thing you can use it for in the first place?
Oh,
doesn't make sense.
What I didn't realize, which was even worse, was that when you hit the number sign to make another call, you get charged the 75 cents again.
Right.
So you're not recalling the access number.
Right, you're saving time, but you're being charged the same. It doesn't make any sense at all. And as long as people don't question it, it's going to keep going on. Just like this is the biggest abuse known to phone freaks in the country. If you make a local phone call off a payphone, and I don't mean the Cocots, I mean a regular Bell payphone, and this works all throughout the country. Let's say you make a local call from one payphone to the one right next to it. Okay, it's going to ask you for 25 cents, which you put in before you start dialing the number. And then after 5 minutes, it's going to ask you for another nickel. But if you put in a quarter, it's only going to treat it as a nickel. And then in another minute, it's going to ask you for another nickel.
That's terrible.
It's terrible. It's been going on for years. And you just cannot convince me that the phone company cannot tell the difference between a quarter and a nickel. They're getting away with highway robbery there.
Okay, the second thing is, I don't know if you're aware of this, but it seems like New York Telephone is testing the Star 69.
Yes, they are.
That's pretty neat.
It's neat. It's fun if you know what you're doing and if you know that it exists. If you don't, though, it's possible to really be taken in by it.
Well, I have to say that I did feel a little bit of power today when I dialed it and knew it had hung up on my answering machine.
Uh-huh.
I thought that was good.
And they must have been surprised.
Yes, they were certainly very surprised. But now I think about 20 of my friends know about it, and everyone's playing around with it.
Yeah, well, hopefully the word will get spread. I know it's been spread quite a bit since we talked about it a couple of weeks ago.
Okay.
Let me ask you something. Do you support a mandatory implementation of caller ID?
Of course not. I think just like an unlisted number, the way I see it, if somebody has an unlisted number, it should automatically be not there. I mean, the default should be no. If they had a listed number, I think that it really shouldn't be so bad. Now, there are some people who don't have their address in the phone book.
Right.
I think that those people also should have the right. I don't think it should cost anything to have it on or off. You know, the software is there to make it possible for you yourself to maybe key in something like the way you turn call waiting on and off.
That's true, but why should it be on the person that wants to keep private to have to dial something each and every time to make a call?
They shouldn't have to. It should be on if they didn't have an unlisted number.
Okay, listen, we are out of time. I want to thank you for your call, though.
Hey, there was one last thing that I thought was very important.
Okay, in 3 seconds, hurry up.
Hey, S218, you got to write to Senator Stevens, Washington, D.C., Ted Stevens, Washington, D.C., 20510. It's for competitive bidding for radio frequencies. Very bad amendment. You have till June 12th to write to them.
Okay, maybe we can talk about that next week because we'll have a couple of days beforehand. Thanks for calling. Thanks to everybody else that called in. And also, let me just leave you with one final thought for those of you playing around with the dilemmas of caller ID. Think of the alternative. Think of a parallel here. If you mail something through the post office, are you required to put a return address on your envelopes? No, at least not yet. Something to think about. If you can be anonymous in the mail, you should be anonymous on the telephone. We'll see you next week. I cut myself while shaving. Now I can't make a call. I couldn't get much worse.